Hawks, the mighty Black Hawks. Take the attack, yeah, and we'll back you, Black Hawks. You're flying high now, so let's wrap it up. Let's go, you Hawks. Move on. Now all the Hawks, here come the Hawks. Welcome to another Friday show here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Dave Melton, the site manager here at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. And in just a little bit, you're also going to be hearing the voice of fellow SCHer Eric Eggenheimer. So the Stanley Cup Finals here is going to start off this weekend, and that means the Blackhawks offseason continues. And I don't know if any of you know about this, but I guess the Blackhawks are going to be drafting number one overall in the 2023 draft in just about 3 weeks here. And I guess there's this pretty good hockey player there, Connor Bedard. Might have heard of him. Anyway... this Bedard guy is so good, in fact, that we wanted to get somebody else's perspective on him, so we reached out to Dante DiCaria. He's the play-by-play announcer for the Regina Pats. That's Bedard's WHL team, and Dante's probably watched more of Bedard's hockey games than anybody else in the world in the last few years. So yeah, there was a lot of Bedard talk, and in our typical fashion, we may or may not have thrown a food-related question towards Dante at the end of the conversation as well. Not much more of a preamble is necessary here, so let's get right to the conversation with Regina Pats play-by-play announcer Dante DiCaria.
So, hey, Dante, thank you for joining us so much. I was the one kind of on the Connor Bedard beat for the Blackhawks for our site the last half a year or so, as we were kind of investigating what prospects might be available at the top of the draft for the Blackhawks to be able to pick. But so I've heard some of your calls, you know, obviously that you've done for him for Regina. But for anybody who's kind of not familiar with you or your background, would you like to fill us in a little bit? Just give us kind of an idea of, you know, how you got into hockey and how you got into broadcasting.
Yeah, so my name is Dante DiCaria. I'm 25 years old, and I was born and raised in Ottawa, Ontario. I've lived in several different cities throughout my very young career. I kind of started getting into broadcasting when I was like 15 or 16 years old, and so I guess I've kind of been around the business for like 8 or 9 years now, roughly, if my math is correct. But yeah, I've lived in some different cities. My first break was with the Toronto Blue Jays. I worked as a communications intern in 2017 before moving on to their Class A minor league affiliate in 2018, where I was the number two voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. So I have been obviously in the United States. I worked there for an entire summer in 2018, and it was a great experience. We would have bussed through Illinois, but I've actually never been to Chicago before. So hopefully I'll be able to go someday when Connor's playing for the Blackhawks. Other than that, you know, I lived in Toronto, lived in Lansing. I kind of switched over from baseball to hockey in 2019. Things were a little bit difficult getting back to the United States in terms of the paperwork and visa process. So I decided to just solely switch over to hockey. And then I started doing junior A with the Powell River Kings of the British Columbia Junior Hockey League. I did that for the 19-20 season. COVID hit, went back home to Ottawa. Obviously, there were no opportunities or no jobs available, so I kind of took that year off. But, you know, I kind of kept applying for jobs, looking for opportunities. The Regina Pats job opened after the longtime voice of the Pats, Phil Andrews, moved on to another opportunity. And I put my name in the hat, and after like a three-month process, I got the job. I moved to Regina prior to Bedard's 16-year-old season, so prior to the 2021-22 season, and I had the chance to work with him for the last 2 years, which life-changing for me in terms of not only my game calling, but also just you know, working with a top-tier athlete and a top-tier person. I think we both benefited a lot from each other just being the people that we are. I think we're both really hard workers. We're both two guys that want to get better every single day. We're not okay with just being all right. So really blessed that I had the opportunity to meet this fine young man and his family, because, you know, the group of people that he has, his agency, his parents, himself, are just phenomenal. And, you know, himself, his mom and his dad changed my life for the better.
So I think we're kind of in the similar boat that you've been in the last 2 years, that we're just excited about his arrival here in Chicago, just because it's going to, there's a buzz back around the team already. And I think it's only going to get louder over the next few years. And so you've been at a lot of different levels, in multiple different sports. How does just the whole Connor Bedard experience of the last 2 years, how does that rank, or how does that stand out in your memory so far in your career?
Yeah, it's bigger than being with the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't think, okay, you know, 2017, although I was just an intern, but from what I saw, like Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, and Troy Tulowitzki, and Russell Martin, and, some of these guys. Yeah, like they didn't really, it's crazy. I don't even think they had as much attention as Connor did. And Connor's a teenager, which makes things a lot more difficult. You're talking about guys that are well in their 30s that have been around this and have been going through this for their entire like 20 year span, or 15 years, or 10 years, right? At least a decade. So it's interesting. And the difference is with the MLB is that you have so many people, so much security, like that are able to kind of help you through things. Whereas Connor, it was, his agency, which were great. Greg Landry's fantastic. I really enjoyed working with him. And Connor's got a great support cast there. His family, myself, and our general manager, John Paddock, right? It was a huge balancing act. But, I said to Connor at the end of the season that I don't point the finger and give credit to this person or that person or this person in terms of kind of trying to handle everything. We wouldn't have got through the last 2 years if it wasn't for just the relationship and the communication that him and I had together, right? We were very open. We had a very open book. His agency was awesome to lean on for both myself and for Connor and his family as well. But a lot of the time, which was nice, was with John and his agency and his family. They kind of allowed Connor and I to make decisions. They allowed him and I to kind of work through things ourselves, which is what made everything so special for the last 2 years. And I'm really grateful that our GM, John Paddock, our CEO, Gord Pritchard, his agency and his family had the trust in myself to make those, to try to handle things, and, had the trust in Connor to also, because of how mature he is, to handle those things as well, because he's so polished. But there was never a day throughout the season that we never bounced things off each other. We had really good communication. We were always talking about different things. I was always talking about different situations and different scenarios and things that were happening throughout the year. And like I told him at the end of the year, like if we didn't have that communication, that relationship, and that ability to just kind of have an open book, then I think the last 2 years would have gone a lot more difficult in that aspect.
Do you feel like, as he's kind of exploded and become like the prospect of all prospects lately, did you see a difference in kind of the fandom and in Regina this year, knowing that this was going to be his last season there and the last time a lot of these people would get to see him play up close in person like that?
Yeah, after the World Juniors is when it really took off. January 8th is when he came back, and I think he scored 4 goals, 2 assists, 6 points against the Calgary Hitmen on a Sunday afternoon. That's when it really started to really pick up. It was big in the first half before he left, but we ended up having to hold a whole bunch of autograph sessions and stuff like that. Just the demand was too much for Connor, and it just became a lot, I think, for a 17-year-old kid to kind of go through, especially when you're not playing pro yet, right? And you only have, I don't know, it's interesting because at the pro ranks or at the NHL ranks, you have so many people who have been through it before. Whereas myself, I'd never seen something like this before. And then when I even reached out to the Toronto Blue Jays, to people that I had worked with there, and asked for their advice, they were like, man, like that's way different than anything we ever deal with. Right. So it's difficult, right? Like if you look at our rink, the Brandt Center, there's minor hockey practices after our practices, right? So there was never a real amount of privacy for him, I found, in terms of like when he was leaving the rink, people were coming in so they would see him. Like, it's not like he could park his car anywhere else in order to get to his dress room. There were a lot of dress rooms kind of in the same area as ours where kids were coming in and out. So that's just kind of the nature of the beast and stuff like that. You're not playing in Rogers Place in Edmonton. You're not playing at the Saddle Dome in Calgary. So you just kind of have to deal with those things. And thankfully, Connor was really good at just how he handled it and how he was so good in the community and so good with the kids and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I guess to answer your first question, Eric, I really do think that it did pick up once they realized that he wasn't coming back. And I think there wasn't a single rink that was not sold out, including ours, after January 8th, which was just incredible. So yeah, I don't think you'll ever see a prospect this hype, because I spoke to Mike Stubbs, the voice of the London Knights. What was it, towards the end of January when Connor sold out the Saddle Dome? And he said that they had John Tavares, they had Connor McDavid. He had seen these top prospects come through before in terms of their exceptional status, Aaron Ekblad. And he said that he had never seen anything like this before. So I don't know if you will see anything like this again, because I don't think Michael Mesa is going to have this amount of hype that Connor has. You know, it's funny. I saw a video the other day, actually, where guys were mic'd up on the ice and they were shooting a puck on net and they were saying, "Watch me Bedard," or something like that.
Yeah.
Like NHL players are saying this. Like, that's just like, I don't think NHL players were going on the ice and say, "Watch me be McDavid." You know, that's insane if you think about it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch his arrival in Chicago. Cause like when Tazen Kane got here, hockey was not on a lot of radars in Chicago because the team had been bad for a decade. Obviously, with all the success they had in the 2010s, like it's much more on radars now. And I think just the excitement around, you know, just the tangible thing of ticket sales that shot up the day after the draft lottery. I think it's a much different environment he's going to walk into than it would have been 10, 15 years ago. But to get down to more of a specific thing, like obviously the first thing people talk about with Bedard is his shot. As calling his games for a few seasons now and watching so many of his games a few seasons now, is there a specific, like, very nuanced, a very detailed thing that he does very well? And like a couple examples I can give from the past, like from past Blackhawks is Marian Hossa and his ability to lift opponent sticks was incredible. And then watching Patrick Kane skate up the right wing wall, pull up at the half boards, stop, scan the ice and find somebody open. Like those two very specific things are things that I think you only picked up if you watch those players as much as we did. As much as you've watched Bedard, is there something specific or detailed that he does really well beyond the obvious things like his shot?
Yeah, I think the work ethic is what stands out to me the most. Like he's always trying to get better. He has that Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan mentality, where Michael Jordan would shoot, 1,000 basketballs a day. Kobe Bryant would do the same thing. I think Connor Bedard would shoot over 500 pucks a day. Like when practice was over, he would still go work on his game on his own time. So he would go to the shooting range with like Tanner Howe and Alexander Suzdalev, and they would just shoot pucks for an hour and then go home. So like, it's just the work ethic and the determination just to be that much better, to raise his game. And that's why I think he's going to be a great player, because you can't teach that. Mm-hmm. And it really comes from his mom and his dad, two absolute fabulous people. Like, I think probably the two greatest people I've ever met in my entire life. His dad is one of the hardest working men you'll ever meet, waking up at different hours throughout the night and throughout the day to go log and work a really dangerous job. And I know that firsthand because my uncle in BC as well is also a logger. And I've gone on some of the trips with him and I see how hard it is. And it's difficult working in a logging camp, being away from your family for a long time where it's not the greatest conditions and you're climbing up trees to cut things down. And I think that's where Connor got his work ethic and just the determination that his dad would have to put both him and Maddie, his sister, through different sports and programs as they grew up. Connor wasn't just a hockey player. He played soccer as well. I'm sure he did lots of other things. They obviously put a lot of emphasis in hockey, but I think if he didn't have the support cast that he has in terms of his family, then, you know, he probably wouldn't be the person and player that he is today in terms of just, you know, the respect level he has and how he treats people and how he's just a very nice and loving person and just how incredible he is in terms of like his work ethic. Like, this is a guy, everyone would be off the ice, practice would start at 2, would end at 2:45, and he would stay out until 4 o'clock every single day. And guys starting to really, you know, he was rubbing off on a lot of guys and he made his teammates want to stay out there as well. And next thing you know, you got half the team still practicing until 4 o'clock, right? And working on their shots. And Connor was kind of showing them, you know, how he shoots the puck and stuff like that. So I think it's pretty self-explanatory in terms of what he does on the ice. You guys see it. there's not really much else I could say that you guys already don't know. But the stuff that I love talking about in terms of what separates him from, you know, the other elite players around the NHL is just the work ethic and the determination to get better. The day doesn't stop when practice is over. He continues to keep going. Now, once he gets older in his 30s or late 20s, do I think he can still continue to do that? No, I don't, because eventually it will catch up to his body. But he's 17 years old. Why not do it now?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there an aspect of his game, you know, we've talked about a shot, you talked about his work ethic. Is there an aspect of his game you think that people don't appreciate enough from seeing him again, you know, day in and day out? Is he, you know, we don't really hear a lot about, you know, his defensive positioning, or, you know, he's obviously a playmaker too. He's got a ton of assists to go with all the goals. He's able to utilize his shot as a weapon to get people to key on him and then, you know, look for his teammates at the same time too. So what's another part of his game maybe that nobody appreciates or nobody talks about as much?
It's his strength for me. I hate when people talk about his defensive play, because I think he can be a really good two-way player. I think he can be a really good defensive player. Right. But I think the situation that the Pats were in this year was that they needed him to kind of carry the offense. So that's why he had to move the puck up the ice and do a lot of different things. Again, I think I saw a stat that, you know, he had created like over 50% of Regina's goals this past year or in his time with the Pats, which is just incredible. Right. They leaned a lot on him to kind of carry the offense, whether it was, you know, passing the puck to a guy to get it to another guy, then get it in front to get a goal where he might not have gotten a point on it, right? But for the majority of the time in the second half of the season, he was gathering at least a goal or an assist on every single one of Regina's goals. You look in the playoffs, I think he scored like, what was it, 70-something percent of their goals in the postseason? Like, I just think it's the role that he had on the team. I think once he gets to the NHL and he's going to have to play that defensive side as well, I think he will. It was just kind of the situation that he was in here in Regina and just how much of the load he had to carry. But I think the one thing that they don't talk about enough, because it pisses me off when they talk about how small he is and how, oh, he's too small, he's 5'10", he's this, he's that. This guy is absolutely ripped. Like, he is very strong. He's very competitive. He has that Brad Marchand in him where you can get under the opposition's skin. There were a couple times this past year where we would score a goal on the other team and he would like slowly skate by and give them like a little tap of his stick. Or there was one time where he went and like wound it up and slapped someone on the butt as he was skating by when they scored a goal. Okay. Like he has that feistiness to his game as well, where he can really get under the opposition's skin. He does these little things to just piss the other team off. But yeah, it really bothers me when people say, oh, he's too small. I think I had a friend of mine call me last night and say the same thing. Oh, he's probably going to be a winger because of his height. And I'm like, who cares about his height? The guy is 5'10" and he weighs 190 something pounds. Like, he is ripped. When you look at him, he walks around, veins are popping out of his arms. His legs are look like tree trunks, right? Like, the kid is absolutely just ripped. He, like, there's no other way to describe it. I think people don't really understand just how athletic and the physique that he's in and how well he trains and how well he eats. That's another thing. That story about him not eating junk food is 100% correct. I would see how he would eat on the road. And this guy was very particular and very careful with what he ate. What he puts into his body knows that's what's going to come out. Like, he's not someone, like when we would stop at gas stations during the year, he's not somebody that would be going to get chips or going to get sweets or this or that. You know, he's got his BioSteel for sure. And he would always bring a Yeti cooler on the bus with all of his healthy snacks. And, you know, anytime you would see him eat lunch, whatever his mom would pack him, absolutely unbelievable, great food. You know, he would make sure he would get his fish, his chicken, his rice, his vegetables, his this, his that, his protein shakes, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sure he has a lot of support behind it. I think his family eats very healthy as well. But I do think that, you know, they've done a lot of research on how to, you know, what foods to eat in terms of helping your performance and so on and so forth. So I don't think I ever saw him eat a pizza as well.
Oh,
like,
man.
Like I said, just very particular.
Yeah.
With what he would eat. So I think just the overall, like, one thing that we don't talk about is just how well he treats his body. I think maybe he, I don't know this, but I think he might have got a little bit from Nathan McKinnon at BioSteel camp last year. I know McKinnon's very well known to being that type of guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if they had a chat or something like that. Again, I have nothing to back that up. I never asked him, but I don't know. That just could be an educated guess, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, that seems like that is one of the biggest shifts in just pro athlete culture in general over the last 10 to 15 years. Usually it's guys like in their late 20s and 30s would transition to a more clean eating lifestyle so they can preserve their careers. Now the guys are showing up at the professional level with those already intact.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. And like, he is a little bit of an anomaly because there's still guys that have cheat days. I don't think he has a cheat day at all. Like, I really don't. He eats very well. Like, he's very careful of what he eats and he's very particular. And, you know, on the road, he would order his own food and stuff like that as well if he was hungry. You know, we have our team meals and he would eat that, but he would also make sure that whatever wasn't provided at those team meals that he would go get himself, whether he brought it in his cooler or he ordered it on his own. But most of our players do that anyways. But then you have other guys that aren't as dedicated as him that are still going to the McDonald's, are still going to Tim Hortons, are still going to Subway, right? So that's why there is still a difference between, you know, the guys that put in their body what they want to get out of their body and the guys that are kind of like, I'm still a really good player, but I'm still going to have my cheat days here and there. I'm still going to have a piece of cake. I'm still going to, you know, eat a piece of pizza, whatever it may be, right? I don't think everybody's like that. And I think you could even look in the NHL. There's still guys, yeah, they still eat really well. But say in the off season, or say maybe once a week or every 2 weeks, they'll still have a cheat day. I don't think he has a cheat day at all 12 months of the year.
He has all the self-discipline that I don't have when it comes to food. So good for him. Obviously, that's why he's we're talking about him the way we are.
You know, he would get like he would talk to other guys about different things. Like, he didn't really have to say it, but I think guys would see it. Like, guys that were kind of really glued to him. And they would go like, hey, like, you know, Connor's doing that. We should do it. And he didn't have to say it. He just had to do it and people would want to do it. Like, his post-game cool down was very prepared. And as the season progressed, I would go down, say, on the road after, you know, a game in Lethbridge, I can remember. And he would be doing his cool down and there would be like six or seven guys doing the same thing as him. Like, guys started to really pick up on a lot of the things that he was doing.
I'm curious to see like if similar stories emerge next season when he will be all of 18 years old walking into a professional locker room with guys, some of them who have been in the league for 5 or 10 years, and if they start adopting his things because of the success he's had and hopefully will have when he gets to the NHL level.
Yeah, Dave, I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen. Again, I've never worked in the NHL, so I don't know how the meals work and how they kind of prepare their bodies and how they eat, but I'm sure they have their own personal trainer, sorry. And they have their nutritionists and their own chefs or whatever, depending on the player and the skill set that they have in the kitchen. But I wouldn't be surprised if they have the same discipline as him, but I don't think every player on the Colorado Avalanche has the same discipline.
Right. Right.
You know, I think you can read up on Cale Makar and figure out that, you know, he's not as intense as Nathan McKinnon when it comes to that stuff, but he's still a great hockey player.
Right.
Well, talking about the locker room and kind of, and that's a big question mark for the Blackhawks kind of going into next season. We know that, or we're assuming at least, he'll definitely be on the top line and most likely as a center. Do you think, is there a certain type of player that he plays best with or plays off of very well as we're trying to kind of fill in some of the blanks for what the roster might look like around him next year?
It's one thing for me. You have to have at least you need two guys that I'm going to talk about right now. And I don't know what that player is. You need one guy that thinks the game like him at a high level, probably two that thinks the game like him, right? You talk about his assists, right? Over 70 plus assists this past year. I think he had 72, right? And 71 goals. So that's 143 points. Yeah. In 57 games, which is just insane. Yeah, it was 57. Sorry. You need a guy that can go get the puck for him. Okay. And somebody that thinks the game at that high level, just like him. Those are the two type of players that I think he needs to play with. Okay. So I wouldn't mind you having a little bit of a, maybe a bigger power forward, somebody that's going to go get that puck in the corner, because he can get the puck, but he shouldn't be the one going to get the puck, or getting that, retrieving that puck in the defensive zone and then getting it to him to lead the rush, and then having another skilled player who thinks like him at the high level. The reason why I brought up the assists, I think he probably could have had 90 assists this year if he was able to play at guy with guys that think the game at the level that he does. There was probably maybe three other guys, Tanner Howe and Suzdalev and Svolzel, that could think the game like Bedard, right? But I think at the NHL, if you like, those guys are going to put the puck in the net more than these guys did, because there were times where he would set guys up back door, they'd be wide open, and he hit the post or miss the net or whatever, right? I think I saw a tweet on how many missed assists that Connor had this past year, and it was like 15 or something like that, right? So you can add another, like, on prime chances. So I think, A, you need a guy that can get the puck for him, and a guy that thinks the game at the level that he does. Preferably two guys that can. So I think those are the two line mates that you need to have. Is Tyler Johnson one of those guys? I'm not sure, right? I look at the rest of that Blackhawks roster, and yeah, it's not great. So I think they need to make some deals. They need to bring in some guys via free agency. I don't know what their forward prospect group is like. I think I glanced at it the other day, and it was all right.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah,
all right is a good word for it.
Yeah, so that's why Anaheim or Columbus would have been a really good fit for him, because he would have had a chance to play with guys that think the game and play the game at the level that he does. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. But in saying that, guys, you know, I'm just a broadcaster. I'm not a coach. This is just what I think. I don't know more than what John Pat, like, that's more of a question for a high level thinking hockey executive or coach or scout or whoever.
Well, speaking as Blackhawk fans, we saw the kind of success Patrick Kane had when he was kind of with players that could hang with him, whether that was Panarin or, you know, later on Alex Brinkett. So, I mean, that sounds familiar to us, and it feels like we've kind of seen both sides of that equation too.
Yeah. I mean, I paid attention a little bit to the Blackhawks over the years, more so, I don't know, a little bit more recently when my closest friend's uncle was Joel Quenneville. So I was kind of a little bit of a fan there, but I could see that being a prime example. I think Patrick Kane, you know, obviously has the skill and the talent, but he's a winger. I think Connor can stay at the center ice position. So he's going to need two guys that can support him in that aspect.
And I just hope the lessons that were learned over the Patrick Kane's tenure in Chicago, when you were talking about the size of Connor Bedard, he's roughly the same size as Patrick Kane was, and Bedard's only, he's going to turn 18 this summer. Like, we were talking about this the night of the draft lottery, like, he theoretically could still get a couple inches taller and could could certainly add more muscle onto his frame and add another 5-10 pounds or whatever. So, but he is big enough now to succeed in this version of the NHL. He's the same size as Jack Hughes, who is a number one center on and one of the best players in the league already. So I hope that entire discussion doesn't exist in Chicago, but I'm sure it will pop up at some point. Unfortunately,
I won't even entertain it at all, because I've seen the kid. I see the guy in the gym. This guy is an absolute beast. You guys will see at the combine. Just wait.
Yeah. Okay. So, and thank you again for your time. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your, I imagine you've had a lot of calls over the last few weeks to talk about Bedard, but I'm going to defer to Eric on this one, because we tell everyone we're the best food themed hockey podcast on the internet. Whether or not that's true, it doesn't matter. We just keep saying it till it is. So I know Eric had a specific thing he wanted to ask you about, related to this topic. And it's funny that we bring this up after everything you said about Bedard and how clean he eats, because if you're not, that would be much better for this discussion, I hope.
I'm always curious, especially coming from baseball, and obviously, you know, you've worked through junior, you've worked through, you know, the WHL now. What is kind of the craziest food item that you've seen? You know, minor league baseball is famous for all the ridiculous things that they sell at the game. Is there something that jumps out to you immediately that either was in the press box or, you know, gets sold in the stands?
Oh man, minor league baseball. There was so many. I'm just thinking in my head right now. There, like, I can't think in junior hockey, because it's pretty standard, I'd say. But in terms of in baseball, there was some like hot dogs, like from arm to ear, like full arms length, you know. In South Bend, Indiana, I wouldn't say that it was as crazy, but like one of the best ballpark things that I ever had was the Philly cheesesteak in South Bend, Indiana.
Okay. Yeah. That's not too far from here. That's, it's about an hour and a half drive from Chicago. If you take the right road.
That's right. Dayton, Ohio, they had these, ballpark, they were like helmets and they were like these, like, what are they? They're like little balls, but they're like ice cream. They're like all
balls. The Dippin' Dots.
Yeah, Dippin' Dots. Yeah. In Dayton, Ohio. Dayton Dragons. Yeah. Okay. I went and had one of those. I kept the helmet too.
Okay.
You got to keep the helmet every time.
Absolutely.
In Fort Wayne, Indiana, the home of the Tin Caps, in the third inning of every game, they used to bring up like some wacky dessert. And I had these like two big like dumplings and like a whole bunch of ice cream and like syrup and stuff on top. It was just insane. Yeah,
I think I'm doing a tour of Northern Indiana minor league baseball stadiums now.
They have great stuff, man. I that was probably the best summer of my life, you know, doing the Lansing Lugnuts, going to Clinton, Iowa and Burlington, Iowa and all the way to Bowling Green, Kentucky, obviously across Michigan. My favorite was, I love South Bend. I love Fort Wayne. Kane County, Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah, it was fun. I love that.
Yeah, you were right around Chicago, all over.
Yeah,
I was. Yeah.
We had this conversation way too close to lunchtime because now I'm extremely hungry.
Yeah, but you know, in terms of our food here, it's I will say, like, you know, Connor rubbed off on me, and obviously trying to eat well. I grew up not being a family that eats out a lot. I grew up with an Italian family. We eat in a lot. We cook our own food. So I'm a pretty good chef as well. And, you know, Connor and I was always sharing, you know, some of my recipes and stuff like that with him this past year and his mom. And she's a great cook. I've had some of her food before. It's awesome. You know, my mom's, you know, cooked some stuff for me that I brought to the rink that Connor's tried and he liked it as well. So I think, you know, our eating, his eating habits were rubbing off on me because I said, hey, if he's doing it, I got to do it too.
Fair enough. It certainly seems to be working for him.
Well, if you come to Chicago to visit him and you want to change that, you hit us up and we'll take you somewhere.
We'll get you some stuff. We'll spoil your diet. No problem.
Hey, you know who's the bad influence on me? These people in this Pat's office, because they love to. We got McDonald's across the street. We got this here. They love to eat out. They love their burgers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to get on the Bedard. I guess, you know what? I'll never be on his level because there's certain things where I'm like that. There's nothing wrong with eating that, but it's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't eat that. Right.
Yeah. Well, Dante, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And, I think you and I, we're all in the same boat, is looking forward to seeing what happens next with this team.
I am very much excited, and I cannot wait to be a Chicago Blackhawks fan.
Welcome to the club. Thanks, Dante.
Thank you.
You got it.